Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys and take off your shoes and socks and run you.
I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
And I'm Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And this is
Jordan,
Jesse, go!
Bicycles, tricycles, ice cream, candy, lollipops, popsicles, licorice sticks, Solomon, Brandy, Raggedy Andy, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, home free.
This week on Jordan, Jesse, go Ecstatic Dance and Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Let's go. Jordan, Jesse, go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Joining us on this cool, lovely Los Angeles evening, he's a writer for network television. He's a published author. He's one of the most popular guests in Jordan, Jesse, Go! History.
Yeah.
A nominee, if I recall correctly, for Best Jordan, Jesse, Go! Guest of 2010 in the ad hoc contest on the Maximum Fun Forum that I didn't really want to encourage.
This isn't being officiated by a governing body, you mean?
Well, FIFA.
Oh, okay.
FIFA's in charge of it.
Yeah, they got 4 years till the next World Cup.
The same
they
guy.
Do something, right?
The guy who invented penalty kicks is on this.
Oh, okay.
He's in charge of this.
We should get that octopus to pick the best guess.
Yeah, that's...
Remember that octopus?
He was a great octopus. Octopus is a really smart creature. He can solve complex puzzles.
Sure.
And predict the future.
Yeah.
If it's German.
Right.
Nick Adams
camouflage
with us.
Camouflage, too. Also camouflage.
Nick Repeat Adams.
Yeah. Is Nick now the most often appeared?
I'm the Alec Baldwin of Maximum Fun.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
he's
the only
be,
time anyone ever compared me to Alec Baldwin.
He's got to be neck and neck with Gene and Chris Fairbanks, at least, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's your holy trinity, so to speak.
Can we take us back to the 80s? You're the Paul Simon of of Maximum Fun.
I'll take it.
Wasn't that when Paul Simon was on Saturday Night Live all the time, the 80s?
Isn't Paul Simon close personal friends with Lorne Michaels? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah, no,
deal?
I think it is a buddy
he's,
nepotism
and
thing.
He's married to Edie Brickell still.
Really?
Correct?
Good for him.
Which, that doesn't tie in anything, but I really always you're,
this
a
is just,
for,
this is a segment. The segment is
what's
random white
Paul
people
Simon?
That I like.
Fun facts about the whites with Nick Adams.
The whites. Everything's classy when you put that in front of me.
Hey, Nick, what's Larry Bird been up to?
Larry is good. His back's been flaring up recently.
Oh, boy.
He had an epidural.
Sure.
Larry, I've heard some rumors about the possible dissolution of Vampire Weekend. Confirm or deny?
You know, like, here's the thing. You get to a certain age and you try to stay abreast of what's hip.
Right.
That's how it's pronounced, right?
Absolutely.
And then it's
Cab
just,
in your keeping abreast of pop culture, you have learned that kids now say hep.
Right.
Certainly.
Current.
The kids are calling themselves zooters.
Sure. The zoot suiters. I can't.
Watch out, some carry zip guns.
I saw a group of them smoking the reefers.
Sure.
I don't know who Vampire Weekend is. That's where this is going. I don't know who they are. That's,
no, my I'll wife likes. Learn. You know what? Here's the thing.
There's one of those bands every week. I can't keep up.
You guys, as you guys know, I like rap music. That's my interest in music.
Sure.
And to some extent, I like soul music, but maybe even as much as rap music. But I mostly don't like rock music. But my wife likes Vampire Weekend. Has both of their records, and I know that that the cool kids have are largely divided on the issue of Vampire Weekend. Many of them love Vampire Weekend because they like their Lacoste polo shirts and so on.
I'm already disliking these guys based
and,
on that.
And many of them hate Vampire Weekend because others among them love Vampire Weekend and because Vampire Weekend actually became successful.
Here's how much I hate Twilight and True Blood. I now hate Vampire Weekend.
Wow.
Just because of those
it's
two
carried over.
Vehicles.
Surely you don't dislike the Blade trilogy.
I'm not an idiot.
Okay,
I'm not
you.
A moron.
Yeah,
I.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You have some class.
Speaking of that,
yes, please. Let's
very
speak
popular
of the Blade
tweet
trilogy.
For me a few weeks ago.
Okay,
just here's the thing. Blade star Wesley Snipes
sure.
has to go to prison because he didn't pay his taxes, right? Why not? He makes another Blade movie. The government keeps the proceeds.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody wins.
A publicly funded Blade movie.
Yes.
It can air simultaneously in theaters and on PBS.
Right.
Who would this be sort of like?
Who wins if we send Wesley Snipes to prison? Nobody. Everyone loses.
No, yeah. I mean,
especially Wesley Snipes.
If we get another Blade movie out of the deal, I'm all for it.
Would this be sort of like how the Green Bay Packers are owned by the city of Green Bay, Wisconsin?
Exactly.
Sure.
We could have funny Blade trilogy hats that everyone could wear to the premiere. Wesley doesn't have to go to jail. We get another awesome Blade. Well, we get another Blade movie.
Sure.
Let's just leave it at that. Maybe throw Jessica Biel in this one too, and everybody's happy.
Absolutely.
I told you what my aunt said after she hugged Wesley Snipes at a party, right?
Uh-oh. No, you didn't.
I have this Aunt Claudia who is, I guess what you would call a outrageous older woman at this point. She's not my biological aunt, my mom's closest friend.
Is she sassy? Would she describe herself as sassy?
I don't know if she would. She may be a little bit, even as a 60-year-old lady or 65-year-old lady, somewhere in there.
Does she tell it like it is?
She's maybe a little too cool to call herself sassy, but she definitely tells it like it is. She definitely tells it like it is. And also, she's an Orisha, which is some kind of priestess.
Okay.
It involves wearing white robes. And
do they wear the orange, like some sort of headband, like headpiece as well?
Yes, I think so. It's like a Haitian thing or something. I don't know. Or like an African thing. But she is, she's also not a midwife.
A doula?
A doula. She's a doula. Hmm. She's also a doula. She used to be an administrative judge. But now she's a doula / Orisha. Amazing woman, really amazing woman. And so anyway, she lives in Washington, D.C., and her brother is Wesley Snipes' hairdresser. She has this brother who
Does Wesley Snipes live in Washington, D.C.?
No.
Oh, the brother lives here.
The brother travels with Wesley Snipes.
Oh, wow, okay. Where does the brother, when he's not with Snipes, where does the brother
I think he's
him?
Always with Snipes.
Okay.
I think he's part of the Snipes team.
I mean, that, you
know. No, I mean, you know.
I'm not sure if he's currently Wesley, but for many years,
you know,
at least,
what movie
leading
he
up to
started
this story
being with, like, Demolition Man on?
Because if he's to blame for that debacle,
this all went down.
Because the only problem with Demolition Man
was
his hair. Yeah. Everything else about that movie.
Sandra Bullock was transcendent.
The Taco Bell integration, seamless.
There was, this all went down around the time of Murder at 1600.
Mm.
So he was definitely it then, and that was only a couple years after Demolition
this
Man.
Is
so I think he was
Man.
On
yeah,
Demolition
this is him
Man.
Trying to like serious up a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so anyway, we were in Washington D.C. visiting my mom's family and my aunt Claudia, and I'm staying at Claudia's apartment in D.C. and you know, just hanging out with my cousin Kenita Azulaya, and we get to go to the set of Murder at 1600 and meet Wesley Snipes. I'm like 11, maybe, I'm guessing. Murder at 1600, does that sound about right? 1992? Something like that.
Okay.
11, 12, somewhere in there. And so I get to go to the set. I met Wesley Snipes. He was extremely cordial.
Mm-hmm.
Then my Aunt Claudia apparently went to like an after party that Wesley Snipes was at. And my Aunt Claudia came home, and Nick, I hope you and our African-American listeners will forgive me for doing a vague African-American voice now, but she came home, she went to the party, came home, and talked to me, and she said, "Jesse, I hugged Wesley, and then I came home, and woo, panties to the ceiling." It
First
was basically the greatest thing an adult had ever said to me. Terrifying. I mean, is it terrifying to hear this woman who is essentially your aunt say that when you're 11? Yes. But is it also spectacularly great? Yes.
Panties to the ceiling, meaning she was so excited she took
she
them off.
She ran home to masturbate.
But maybe I'm being too literal. She just launched her underwear straight up. Because she was
straight
so...
up. What happened is she hit
position.
The bed, tilted backwards, legs up. Threw it up, it got caught in the ceiling fan.
Or maybe the power of her orgasm
rocketed
her panties
off the body. Into
right,
the ceiling.
Just when she was hugging Wesley Snipes because he was so ripped.
They hit the ground and because
they bounced off the ground.
She had flubber panties on and they bounced up.
It was a flubber panty situation.
F panty.
Clearly a flubber panty.
Yeah, well, so anyway, that's the time I met Wesley Snipes, and then my aunt said something outrageous.
She definitely tells it like it is, though.
No, she does, right? She tells it like it is. She tells it like it is. You know, just yesterday you were over at the house, Nick, and you were wearing a Shirley Chisholm for president.
I was.
I am very, very confident that my Aunt Claudia voted for Shirley Chisholm.
I'm sure she did.
I don't know who that is.
Shirley Chisholm was the first African American person to seek a major party's nomination for president. She ran in 72.
She was a congresswoman, wasn't she?
From Brooklyn, if I'm correct. There's a really good documentary about her that you could access via the internets.
Okay.
And she was kind of a badass.
Yeah. She was serious.
Yeah.
She didn't take no mess.
Gun-toting?
Yeah, she was sort of a
She was Madea.
She was like a Yosemite Sam type figure, is how I would describe her.
Do you remember there's one where Yosemite Sam and Bugs Bunny both ran for mayor of a small western town?
Right, sure. So she had, I mean, well, look, here's
her
the
button
differences.
Was rootinous tootinous congresswoman for president. That was her campaign slogan.
There are differences. She was African American. He, of course, was an Anglo. Yeah.
Sure.
Similar mustaches.
Yeah, mustaches were similar in shape, if not in scale.
Or color.
Hers was, she's not a cartoon character.
Yeah, it's not ridiculous. It's being silly.
But she could lift herself off the ground by firing her guns into the ground.
Well, they both had stump legs also.
Sure.
If you want to take that into account. Anyway, Nick Adams with us. We'll be back in just a second on Jordan Jesse Go. Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Nick Repeat Adams.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you here, Nick.
It's good to be had.
Nick, here. By the way, I alluded in the introduction, Nick is a writer, a staff writer on a network television situation comedy program.
That's right. I'm part of the problem.
It's called Perfect Couples.
P-Cup, as I call it. That's what the kids are saying on the street, P-Cup.
Absolutely. This is very hotly anticipated. It's going to be running between Community and The Office on NBC Thursday nights.
Got a nice, cushy time slot.
I believe it's, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember, it stars Thurman Munson.
He's one of the principals.
Controversial Daily Show contributor, Thurman Munson. Is that correct?
I think you might be confusing him with Olivia Munn, I think, maybe.
Right. No. Olivia Munn played catcher for the Yankees in the 70s.
You're right.
Right.
I'm wrong.
Died tragically in that plane crash.
You're testing the limits of my baseball knowledge.
Okay.
Sure.
So, Nick, we had Jen Kirkman on the show a few weeks back,
Co-worker.
Who was also a writer for this same
she
show.
Is. Jen Kirkman, premature old lady.
Really?
I told her on the show, no matter what happens between us, whether we stay in touch or not, I'm going to track her down when we're 70-ish, because she's already the funniest old woman I know.
What about her sense of humor as old lady?
It's not even her sense of humor. It's just every... I'll tell you a really quick, funny Jen Kirkman story.
Please.
We're talking about the guy who wrote Lone Star, who created the TV series Lone Star, the canceled Fox series, also wrote
the Mel Gibson movie, The Beaver. Sure.
So we're talking about the fact that, wow, this guy has this hot script, which is now finally getting released, and then he has the show, and Jen Kirkman chimes in, wait, the guy who created OnStar wrote The Beaver? Every day with at least one of those every day.
That's great.
It's great. It's hilarious. That's my Jen Kirkman.
Oh,
side.
Man.
She's good people. I love her.
So, it's America's sweetheart. America's in love with Jen Kirkman.
Why wouldn't they be? So it seems like this show that you write on is kind of like a battle of the sexes type show. Is that a good way to describe?
I would describe it as
the central conflict.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that, but I think it's also battle of the sexes and then battle of the couples. You know, it's that idea of you look at other couples and think they're crazy, and then you realize that you're crazy,
sure.
And everybody's crazy.
But you got the waitress from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is one of the stars of this program.
Mary
if I'm not
Elizabeth
mistaken.
Ellis,
sure,
very very talented lass,
very talented and funny lady.
Yes, very very talented.
Is the writing staff kind of equal parts men and women, and do you feel like you're kind of called on for like a dude perspective, or is it not?
It was
gendered that
pretty
much.
Balanced, but more guys than girls. But there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we got cut back down to 4 ladies.
That's pretty solid, though, for a network television sitcom.
Yeah,
it's pretty,
and
that's a strong.
Strong voices and strong opinions. They were no shrinking violets, these ladies. But I think what they were looking for more is just a married person perspective, just an adult married person perspective. I mean, there's a lot of guys on the show, and I wasn't necessarily calling for a dude perspective, but I think they just wanted like a lot of divergent married people perspectives.
I think you'll find that in the comedy writer community, there may be a certain delayed emotional development in evidence.
So you're saying comedians and comedy writers tend not to be the most mature group?
I'm just suggesting that I think you'll find more of them getting married in their early 40s than in their mid-20s.
I think I must be the exception, though. I wasn't married in my early 20s, but I've been with my wife since I was 22. So I'm sort of like an old married person in a younger person's body. If that makes any sense. I think that was...
But isn't early marriage a sign of maturity, do you think? Do you think the people who do get married at 22, 23, do you think that's necessarily a mature decision all the time?
I think it's...
No, but I think that what I'm trying to say is, in a lot of the people that I know in the comedy world, I will grant them there are many wonderful qualities, but especially among the guys... I would not describe a lot of them at age 26 as marriageable.
Sure, totally.
Right. I would agree with that.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of 26-year-old guys in the comedy community who are still working on 21-year-old guy skills.
Could you say that about 26-year-olds in general, though?
I think it's extra in the comedy world. I definitely think it's extra in comedy world. I think you could certainly say that about a lot of guys.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. And a lot of women, for that matter.
True.
But I think in comedy world, you get a lot of 26-year-olds that are, still working on
making
stuff.
Making a hand gesture.
Just honing down their
life skills.
I don't
know how familiar you are with radio, but that doesn't really translate.
This hand gesture means honing their life skills.
Sure. But also, in defense of that, if you're 26 and you are pursuing comedy writing or comedy, chances are you may not be the most financially stable individual in the world. Chances are your living situation may not lend itself towards stability or marriage. And the ladies don't tend to gravitate toward those type of fellas.
They like the fellas that own a vacuum.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I think it's best to meet someone when you're 21 or 22.
When no one has a vacuum.
No one has anything. They don't. When I met my wife, I had, I think, like literally one pot. Like I had one tiny pot that I cooked ramen noodles in.
I was going to say a ramen-sized pot.
Yeah, ramen-sized. Perfect for ramen, but for anything else.
That's just what it says on the package.
Yeah, perfect for ramen.
And they sell it in the video game section at Target.
99-cent store. You can buy like a dozen of them for 99 cents.
Okay. So a listener called in.
Yes.
And said that he had a momentous occasion that was taking place in the future for him and the present for us. And this momentous occasion was when we finally got around to talking about Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. So I want to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
We've been teasing it mercilessly.
For weeks.
Yes.
Maybe a month at this point.
Sure.
And by teasing it mercilessly, I think we mean genuinely thinking that we're going to talk about it, but then realizing that our show is already way too long and we forgot to talk about it.
Sure. It's an evergreen topic. That's one of those classic movies.
This is something that everyone can relate to.
Sure.
This marginal film.
Gather grandma around the podcast.
So for people who don't know what Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans is, people may be familiar with the Abel Ferrara film Bad Lieutenant. What happened is apparently one of the producers of Bad Lieutenant owns the rights to the idea of Bad Lieutenant.
Sure.
If it's a Rear Admiral, bad Rear Admiral, that's anybody's game.
Up for grabs. That is public domain. That is like Camptown Races.
even if you said you do have to pay him royalties if you set it in London and it's Bad Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
That is, does fall under, there's been some lower court decisions on this matter. Sure. Hasn't made it all the way up to the Supreme.
It's sort of like Will.i.am. Like, if you make that movie, you have to give him, like, in parentheses, he has to get a credit.
Right, exactly.
Wait, what?
Like, Will.i.am, when he does a shitty song, and then whoever he sampled gets, you know, the songwriting credit. Not just Will.i.am, but any puffy. Sure.
Primarily Will.i.am.
Yeah, he pretty much does all the bad sampling.
Okay.
Nowadays.
Rap expert Nick Adams.
Oh, boy. 37-year-old rap expert.
So, basically, the guy does not own the rights to the script or the story of Bad Lieutenant. He just owns the rights to Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
The idea of a lieutenant
Two words coupled with some sort of...
What if there were a movie about a cop whose last name was Bad and it was called Lieutenant Bad?
I think that belongs to Damon Wayans. Damon Wayans is working on that. Actually belongs to Keenan, and Keenan is developing
it. It's a vehicle for the younger one,
yeah.
The son.
This is just coming off all those warm feelings from Major Payne, right? This is you're coasting off that.
Yeah.
So this guy decides, he like looks at his portfolio and says, what can I do with Bad Lieutenant? Well, I can make a new Bad Lieutenant movie. It can't be a remake of the original Bad Lieutenant movie, but it can have Bad Lieutenant in the title. It just sort of like Death Race 2, or what was that you went to the
other
day?
Yes, Death Race 2.
Like Death Race 2, you know, he has the rights to make a sequel, but it can't have anything to do with the original one.
Sure.
It's a reboot.
It's a reboot. But a complete reboot. And so that's all fine and good. It sounds like that, you know, there was that Scarface 2 a couple years ago.
Was there a Scarface 2?
I think there was a Scarface 2.
Maybe
I'm thinking of something else. There was something with,
there was a Carlito's Way.
There was
Carlito's Way 2.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I was
also
thinking of.
Also Boondock Saints 2.
Yes. Carlito's Way 2, I think maybe it had Luis Guzman in it or something.
It
there was someone
right.
that was
sure.
credible.
Every third movie has Luis Guzman in it.
Sure,
too.
And why not?
Why not?
If
absolutely.
I made a movie, fucking Luis Guzman's in it.
Absolutely. If it's about Amish people, just throw Luis in
he's
there.
He's like one of those guys who, like, is I'm sure just like a casting director's dream, because he makes every movie better, but he's probably so easy to get. Like, it's probably like so not hard to get Luis Guzman.
Man, I'll tell
to
you,
do something.
When I interviewed Luis Guzman for The Sound of Young America, it was over the phone. He was in his home state of
Vermont.
Yeah.
That.
He lives in very rural Vermont. He had to drive to get to a place that had a public radio station where we could have him go into a studio. He had to drive an hour and a half.
Jesus.
Just to get to a small town in Vermont. It wasn't to get to Montpelier or whatever
the bustling
capital.
Metropolis of Montpelier.
And so anyway, after I talked to him, for like half an hour, and then he just wanted to keep talking with me. And he told me how much fun he had talking to me. And basically what I learned is Luis Guzman in real life is exactly like Luis Guzman in a movie and just as fantastic.
Sure. I believe it.
Didn't you work on the Fox lot when Luis Guzman had a Fox show and you always wanted to try and get into their ultimate Frisbee game or something?
Yeah, no, the staff of the Luis Guzman show would always have these kind of games of touch football out in the parking lot. Luis Guzman show ran by these two guys who wrote on this really kind of weird, funny MTV cartoon called Clone High. Where the clones of a lot of famous historical figures all go to high school together. Anyway, so that was like around the time that I just like wanted a writer of a TV show to talk to me and just tell me what the fuck to do.
And you thought you could leverage your football skills.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, skills. I mean, if there's one thing, if there's a way to squeeze in here.
Once these guys see what a
they
tight,
need a tight,
tight
end.
Tight spiral I can toss.
Yeah, right? They'll
it's the old Hollywood Boys Network of touch football.
Yeah,
once they see how I run a post.
Then they'll say, hey, kid, why don't you get us some lattes? Yeah. And then, boom, fame and fortune.
Yeah.
And that happened, too. That exact thing happened.
Yeah.
It didn't.
That's why you're so famous now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just piggybacked on that. We've both essentially become major stars from that
one game of touch football. Yeah. You know, I never really saw Luis Guzman while that was happening, but I kind of creepily made excuses to walk by the writer's bungalow and
ask
their assistant a couple of times if anybody wanted to talk to an intern, and it never happened.
So
the end.
So anyway,
they went on to make the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs movie that was pretty good.
So
the end.
The back to Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, sure. New Orleans. So this.
Do you
producer,
want to talk more about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs?
The producer owns. The producer owns the rights to this thing. He gets a script written. The script is in many ways what you would expect from a reboot of Bad Lieutenant.
Have either of you seen the original?
No, I have not seen the original.
You have?
Yeah.
What's it like? Is it a quality movie? Is it fun to watch?
It's a dark, good sort of gritty. It's Harvey Keitel, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Is it late 70s?
Maybe early 80s?
Okay.
I think early 80s. Sounds more.
Right.
It's been years since I saw it, but I remember thinking
that's enough. I think that's for the purpose of this discussion.
And, you know, it's something like what you would expect from a moderately seedy version of that, this script. But where it gets good is then this producer happened to be friends with legendary German-American film director Werner Herzog. Now, you can't go wrong if you're friends with Werner Herzog.
Yeah, you're doing something right.
And he calls Werner Herzog.
You made some good decisions in your life.
As I heard Werner Herzog describe it in what I think we can all agree is probably the greatest ever episode of The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell.
Yeah. This is a cool public radio show that you can podcast. And I would recommend, before and after watching Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, listening to this interview, because it will make the movie enjoyable.
So much more magical.
That's a good way to describe The Treatment and shitty movies.
Yeah.
It's that good of a show that even a shitty movie, you're like, oh, I kind of respect this person, even though they made this ridiculous movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. I went and saw the Fantastic Four movie after that guy. That didn't work for Fantastic Four. That was too shitty that not even
Elvis
Mitchell
is good,
could make me believe that there are themes in that movie.
Jessica Alba's not blood?
The one thing I don't recommend that you listen to is the creator of Weeds, Jenji Kohan, Elvis Mitchell. She'll just make you want to punch her in the nose.
Sure.
So anyway, we're going to step aside from that issue. So he asks Werner Herzog.
Tiny Furniture Lady also, too. Don't listen to that.
Asks Werner Herzog.
It's the worst movie in history.
Yeah. Asks Werner Herzog to direct this film. And Werner Herzog agrees. And Werner Herzog calls Nicolas Cage.
Sure.
He happens to have, as he presented it, had a long sort of on and off telephone relationship with Nicolas Cage, where they always discussed what they would do if they did a movie together. And Werner Herzog, because he's Werner Herzog, had the chutzpah to call a film star, Nicolas Cage, albeit famous eccentric film star, but film star nonetheless, and say, hey, I'm doing what will obviously be basically a direct-to-DVD reboot of Bad Lieutenant that only came about because some producer happened to own the words Bad Lieutenant. Would you like to be the star of it, the titular Bad Lieutenant? And Nicolas Cage, because he wanted to work with Werner Herzog, agreed.
Yeah.
And the result is, how would you even describe what it is?
Yeah, it is. It is just kind of like, it is just kind of a seedy exploitation movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quality of the story and stuff is is that of a direct-to-DVD sequel, but with just some crazy, bizarre filmmaking touches and Nicolas Cage acting as Nicolas Cagey as he's ever acted in anything before. And also just some weird turns by, like, Jennifer Coolidge and the girl who was the lead from The Craft. Also kind of giving these weird...
Robin Tunney, I think?
Maybe. Don't know. Not the evil lead from The Craft.
That's Fairuza Balk.
I'm thinking of Fairuza Balk, I think. Mm. Anyways, and it's hilarious and baffling, and and Eva Mendez is also kind of fun to look at because she's
spectacularly good looking.
Beautiful.
This brings to my main issue with the movie. The two things that it set off in my mind was there are two main questions. One, how does Nicolas Cage choose movies? Is it one of those Dungeons and Dragons dies that he just rolls, and if it lands on 12, I do this movie?
Well, here's the thing, and I think that that is something that everyone asks. I mean, I think we've all maybe seen the trailer for Season of the Witch at this point and gone, what the fuck? He's in, like, tax trouble.
Right, right.
And I think he has to be constantly making movies because he bought a $20,000 dinosaur skeleton, I was going to say.
He owns a castle.
Yes, yeah.
Also dinosaur bones.
He owns every Spider-Man or something, too.
Yeah, yeah. So I think he's just been bad with his money. So these things that you're like, oh, well, why would a major movie star do them? Why is Nicolas Cage doing them? I think it's for money reasons. But maybe he just also loves being crazy in movies.
Here's what's amazing. Here's what struck me about the film that I feel like maybe you left out of your description just now. Which is, in addition to, and we'll get to the filmmaking flourishes of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, because they merit significant discussion. But in addition to that, I think Herzog brings to this film a kind of presentness and kind of emotional currency that I found really upsetting. Because it's the film, the shit that's going down in the film is absurd.
Sure.
And everyone is acting absurd.
Mm-hmm.
But the film is not, it's not crazy. It's not crazy in the sense that it doesn't know what's going on or that it's lampooning itself.
Yeah, no, and yeah, and that's kind of the, when you hear it described, you're like, oh, this is a farce.
No, it's not a goof.
Snakes on a plane thing. Yeah. No, it's like it's, you know.
But it's also not, I mean, like, I want to be clear, it's not so bad it's good.
Sure.
No, yeah.
And it's also not
good.
Self-aware about being bad and a joke.
Yeah.
But it is operatic, but it's weirdly, it's just a weird combination of that operaticness with the kind of, a kind of crackling presence and intensity that I found very upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, I expected it to just be ridiculous.
Yeah. It's
so
like
that I could laugh at it. But
like
I found myself unable to laugh at it.
Like when you watch Showgirls, you're like, Showgirls, like a lot of upsetting things happen in Showgirls, but because you know, you're aware that it's supposed to be, you know, bad or bad good or something that. It really, like, it's hard to let it affect you. But yeah, I think Bad Lieutenant has some of those Showgirls-y qualities.
But no Robert Davi. Like, you have to have Robert Davi in your movie for it to be bad and good, bad that it's good. You can't not have Robert Davi in the movie and
expect
people to get that.
I think what it is that Werner Herzog, like, no one has control over the idea of pitching towards madness like Werner Herzog does.
Sure, and that's why listening to this treatment interview is such an essential part of watching this movie. I might say don't even go near the movie until you've listened to it, because, like, yeah, it seems like...
I've listened to it 3 times, by the way.
Sure. It seemed like he's, like, he really seemed like he was having fun with this, and him and Cage were like, this is fun, and we want it to be as crazy as possible, and it's so, like, I don't know.
I think what it is that Werner Herzog's idea of fun includes, like, sickening emotional intensity.
Sure.
Like, Werner Herzog, his idea of something that's worth doing is something that will, like, shake you up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that is an element of this film, despite the fact that these things that should be like something happening, because the script of the film is essentially the script of it's like a Showtime movie.
Sure.
You know, late night movie level content.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically just, you know, like, oh, then there's some prostitute. His girlfriend's a prostitute, and everyone's addicted to drugs, and blah, 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 blah.
Nick, now you said you didn't make it all the way through the movie, right?
At what
point did you turn it off?
I approached it, I think, the same way Jesse did, and I thought, this will be a goof. I'll watch this movie and get a laugh at how crazy it is. And for me, it wasn't even... It's like you have to take it to such the nth degree and laugh at yourself in order for it to be fun in that way. And like you said, the movie is taking itself seriously. And at a certain point, I just thought, well, I could just be watching something good. So
I think, you know, when I was watching it, I wondered if I wasn't. And I haven't, you know, I've self-consciously not talked about The New Sincerity in a long time. just because I got tired of people asking me about it.
Sure.
But I wondered if it wasn't like the dark, evil side of the new sincerity.
Yeah, no, and that's I think that's a great way. That's a great description of it, and I think that's totally perfect. As it is, like, yeah, if you are a person who thinks, you know, outrageously upsetting things are fun and funny, then yeah, this is it.
Like, yeah. Well, then I would rather 500 movies like Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans exist than 500 Twilights. Like, I sure. mean, I would much rather see that movie at the multiplex every Saturday than another shitty, cynical sequel just totally designed to.
I mean, I kind of feel like I kind of feel like if you, I definitely agree that if you're like if you're the kind of person that just really likes amusing, that really finds horrible things amusing, mm-hmm. you'll think this movie's really funny. I think that's true. But I also think that Herzog, both Herzog and Cage, probably succeeded in doing what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And they just have different values.
Okay, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, that Herzog, I really got the feeling that it was the movie that he wanted to make, and part of the quality of it was, like, this is like a grotesque fever dream.
Yeah.
And him setting it, because Herzog was the one who, as if I remember correctly, who decided that it should be set in New Orleans. Like, it was sort of a generic.
Wasn't a big part of setting it in New Orleans because
tax
they could get,
subsidies.
They could get a tax break for
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. But I mean.
So there's this weird practicalness to the whole thing,
and then
too,
they threw
anyway.
A Katrina element.
Well,
in
Herzog
there.
Is really proud of his practicalness. I mean, he's really proud of like how he brings every movie $1 million under
budget.
He says
in the interview, it's one of the best things ever said. He's like, I brought the movie in for two weeks early and $1 million under budget.
Maybe.
After that point, the producers wanted to marry me.
maybe take the 2 weeks.
Yeah, sure.
Just say
just
that. You have two. If someone gives you, let's say someone contracts you to do a deck.
Yeah.
To build a deck. And they say, look, you got 2 weeks to build this deck. And here's $20,000. I don't know how much it costs to build a deck. You finish the deck. You have 4 days.
And then
and
the
eight
people
grand
come
left.
Out and they say, wait a minute. This deck is made out of alligators.
Maybe take a couple of days and just polish the deck. Like, make sure all the screws are tight. Make sure everything's in place. Just take the time.
There's these moments in the film that Herzog kind of laughs about with Elvis Mitchell in the interview mm-hmm. that are absolutely 1,000% Werner Herzogian. That he just sort of decided to put in the movie, and you can just
yeah,
tell.
Yeah, I think he mounts a camera on an iguana at some point.
Yeah.
Or there's an iguana, and there's a big scene that is unrelated to the story that is shot from the iguana's point of view.
Yeah, there's an iguana POV shot. There's a lot of alligator related stuff or crocodile related stuff.
Sure.
There's like a whole scene where Nicolas Cage goes out to like. Meet with an old friend from the highway patrol and the highway patrol is doing some kind of investigation of a crocodile, a dead crocodile.
Gators. They're gators.
Oh, it's a car accident caused by an alligator on the road.
Yeah. And there's just way too much attention paid to the alligator, not in the dialogue, but
sure.
in the way that the scene is
sure.
shot. Like the alligators, like this dead alligator's this creepy looming presence.
This movie's ridiculous.
Also a mob boss gets shot. And Nicolas Cage, in some sort of weird drug haze, says, look, his soul is dancing. And no one else in the room sees it, but then it cuts to a crazy breakdance scene of the dead mafia boss. He's like a fat Italian guy.
Now I have to watch
like a
the
crazy,
entire movie.
He does a crazy breakdance.
Now I have to watch the entire movie.
That's yeah, that's it. Later on.
Too classical music.
When as Nick Cage is even more batshit. And then it kind of has a happy ending,
It has a comically happy ending where a line of like Nicolas Cage has a bunch of problems in this movie. One, you know, there's this case that he can't crack, and his bookie is always on his back. I guess he's making a lot of bad bets and trading like drugs for his gambling debts and stuff. And there's this part where he's sitting at his desk in the police precinct, and one by one, people like as if they were in a single file line come by and tell him that his problems have been solved in all these areas. Like it's, and I'm like, oh, this has to be a weird drug hallucination. No, it was real.
But I kind of feel like that is what Werner Herzog wants from you.
Yeah.
Like, I just feel like he chose it.
Sure. No, absolutely. And it doesn't feel like this is, a shitty movie that they didn't have enough time. Everything feels deliberate.
And what's amazing about it is that you feel like Werner Herzog, like, he wanted it to have that quality, but only because he knew that if it was like that, it would upset you and confuse you more. Like,
sure.
It would thrust you more, not because in his world of the film, this is, it's all, not because in his conception, the whole, like, last 10 or 15 minutes is like a crazy drug dream or something and didn't really happen, which is sort of how you would think that he would play that.
Yeah.
Or because it's making fun of it. It's because he thinks that the crazy world of this film is best furthered,
sure,
by everything resolving.
Yeah, I guess Nicolas Cage kind of solves the crime.
Solves the crime, although at one point he almost murders an elderly woman.
Sure. But yeah, it seems like it is kind of that 70s idea of filmmaking, like, let's try and upset and confuse and make squirm the
audience.
It's
movies like Jazz Fusion. It's not supposed to feel good. It's supposed
Ornette
to be challenging.
The Ornette Coleman of
it's like late
movies.
Miles Davis.
Sure.
I want to say one thing about Nicolas Cage in the movie.
Sure.
I thought he was great.
Sure. He's so fun to watch. And that scene where he accosts the old lady and he reveals himself because he's hiding behind the door and also shaving for some reason is such a... And it's a ridiculous way, but I don't know. It is. It's compelling. And
it's compelling. And it's also, I mean, what amazed me about it was none of it, even the things that were hilarious, weren't hilarious in the sense that they were jokes. Nothing that he did felt to me anyway, like he was undercutting what was going on in the film. Or undercutting the reality or undercutting the tone, it felt grounded no matter how insane things were happening. Even when he saw the ghost breakdancing.
You gotta see the end, Nick. You fucked up.
I definitely do.
There's ghost breakdancing.
I bought it from Nicolas Cage. And it's amazing to see someone have that, like, sort of like the only part, like, someone I could compare it to maybe is like William H. Macy, who you just feel like when you're watching him on screen that he is just present in every millisecond of his screen time, that he's just right there engaged and real and like being.
Well,
only it's that with just apeshit things going on.
Well, I rewatched There Will Be Blood last night, and I'm like, this Daniel Day-Lewis performance is no less crazy than the typical Nicolas Cage performance. Yeah. It just happens to be in a good movie.
Yeah, and it's just, he picks his movies so well, and everything he does is incredibly cinematic, and
sure,
mood and theme and tone, and
right,
just the quality of everything he does. But he immerses himself in the same way. And
let me ask you this question. Do you think that if before making Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, Nicolas Cage had taken a few years off to move to Italy
to
and learn
to be
a
cobbler,
do you think that would have altered the critical reception of the film,
maybe,
if not the quality?
Maybe don't buy a castle.
Maybe don't outbid Shia LaBeouf for a dinosaur skull.
Nick Adams, accountant to the stars. Cage, I'm going to say don't buy the castle.
Sure.
I believe it was Leonardo DiCaprio that he outbid for the dinosaur.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, come on. Get real, man.
I'm sorry.
Let's get serious for a second here.
I fucked up.
What do you got on the dinosaur bones, by the way? That dinosaur skull? I'm thinking about going 420. 450? I think I can afford $450 for a dinosaur skull.
Yeah. A million.
Shit.
I'm going.
That means you have to do National Treasure 3.
That's fine. National Treasure 3, Ghost Rider 2, and I don't know, something where I'm a wizard.
Yeah.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice 2.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Sure, yeah. Sorcerer's Apprentice 2.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan Jesse Go. It's Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
And Nick, repeat Adams.
So I had a great idea over the holidays for a new segment on Jordan Jesse Go. We've been
just that boner patrol thing you've been talking about.
I like it already.
Somebody called in and they said, we may be playing this call later in the show. I can't remember if I picked it or not, but they said that they were talking with their girlfriend about Jordan Jesse Go, and I think they said the distinguishing characteristic was that host that talks a little bit too much about his dick.
Mm.
And I want to contend with that. I talk a little bit too much about dicks. I don't talk that much about my dick.
I don't know. Yeah, I would say that talk about your dick or any specific dick.
No, I talk about the idea of dicks a lot.
Yeah, this is dicks as an idea.
I do talk a lot about dicks.
Sure.
There's no doubt about that. And I do find it endlessly amusing, the idea of doing something normal, but your dick is out.
Sure.
There's no doubt about that either. And that's come up on every third Jordan Jesse Go since we started doing this thing.
At least.
But I don't talk very much about my dick. It's pretty unremarkable. There's not much to talk about. Okay. I just want to let that be.
Go ahead.
That's settled. Nick, you look worried.
I'm just wondering if someone's dick is going to come out.
No, right. We wouldn't do that kind of thing. We're classy. We're running a classy operation here,
a little
Nick.
Dubious.
To wit, a new segment on Jordan Jesse Go, Important Information.
Mm.
Important Information. On this segment, a listener will email us a Wikipedia article about something really important that everyone should know about. And then we discuss that article.
Okay.
This week, Jess has been kind enough to email us an article. This is a different person than me. I'm not using their last name. I don't know if it's a fella or a lady. But Jess has emailed us some important information. The Dancing Plague of 1518.
Mm. This is the novel that Footloose was loosely based on.
The outbreak, the dancing plague, began in July 1518 when a woman, Frau Trophia, in Strasbourg, France, began to dance fervently in the street. This lasted somewhere between 4 and 6 days. Within a week, 34 others had joined her, and within a month, there were around 400 dancers.
Stop, because Werner Herzog is going to hear this program, and the next thing you know, he's going to be on.
10 days later,
he's going to be on the phone with Nick Cage.
Yeah.
I'm working on a documentary about the timeless battle between man and dance.
I don't want to risk it.
Within a week, 34 others had joined. Within a month, there were 400 dancers. Some of these people eventually died from heart attack, stroke, or exhaustion. It was not just it was a dancing mania.
This was an episode of Happy Days, right?
Pure madness. There are numerous independent confirmations that it was specifically dancing and not like conniptions. People were not just flailing.
It's not seizures.
No, they were dancing maniacally, literally maniacally, because it was a mania. The physicians at the time ruled out astrological and supernatural causes, instead announcing that the plague was a natural disease caused by hot blood.
First of all, you use the year 1518 in physicians in the same paragraph, which basically means dudes.
Yeah.
In 1518, physicians were just dudes. They didn't know shit about shit.
Apparently, authorities believed that dancers could only recover if they continuously danced night and day, so they opened 2 guild halls and a grain market and constructed a large wooden stage for the dancers to dance on.
Was it thinking that they would just dance it out?
They figured they'd dance it out. They essentially had 20-year-old college girls' approach to a bad breakup the dancing mania.
They all got into a circle.
Sure.
Yep.
No guys allowed.
Yeah, they put on a great song.
I'm calling bullshit on this whole thing.
The authorities paid for musicians to play for the afflicted.
I was gonna ask, at what point was there music to dance to? Because this is
did music exist in 1518?
Yeah, I was just saying, it's not like, oh, well, if you were in public and if you're dancing in public, maybe it's just like a song that's, it's coming out of Marshalls, and you can hear it from the street. Like, where is the music coming from?
Right, they just had a constant stream of mandolin players.
Yeah, and what is the famous music? Like, what is the music from?
Just Greensleeves? Greensleeves on repeat?
Yeah.
Isn't someone really famous from Strasbourg? Okay, anyway, it was part of the Holy Roman Empire, by the way, which is another nice thing about this whole story.
Sure.
So there are theories about this. One of the original theories was that it was caused by St. Anthony's fire, which is also known as ergotism, which is like a fungus that grows on bread and causes madness. But apparently it also causes difficulty to use your limbs, which is would lead to one to suggest that people would then stop dancing.
Difficulty meaning you can't control your limbs or you can't get your limbs to move, because if you can't control your limbs,
they're moving independently of your brain.
There you go.
They said ecstasy, like an ecstatic, and not ecstasy the drug, but like an ecstatic mania, like sort of like a speaking in tongues, the equivalent of speaking in tongues or something like that, where people get themselves worked into a state of frenzy, or possibly. Something called MPI, or mass psychogenic illness, which are sometimes caused by famines, which there was a famine because of cold winters, hot summers, crop frosts, and of course, violent hailstorms.
Sure.
Anyway.
Which do you guys think it was?
I think this is a new segment on Jordan Jesse Go. Very important information. Is sure. that what I decided to call it?
I forget.
Yeah, but I think important information is what we decided to call it. The Dancing Plague of 1518. If you want to email us some important information, it's jjgo@maximumfun.org. We'll be back in just a second. It's Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Nick Repeat Adams.
You know, we took a couple weeks off there for the holidays. Mm-hmm. We enjoyed New Year's and Christmas. Sure. I had a lovely holiday. You, Jordan?
Very nice.
Mr. Adams?
It was pretty good. It's pretty good.
Hey, nothing better than the holidays, am I right?
Yeah. You got that network TV money to spend, too.
That's right. But I'm also I've recently impregnated my wife, so I can't get too crazy.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
On the sperm.
Yeah.
You got great sperm, Nick.
That's pretty good sperm.
I've always said you got great sperm.
It's fair to middling sperm, I have.
Hey, just admit it, Nick. You busted her out with your super sperm.
Oh, excellent illusion.
Panties to the ceiling, right? panties to the ceiling.
Through the ceiling. Ah. In my house.
So we got a lot of telephone calls. I thought it'd be fun if we did a couple, two telephone segments this week.
Hey, why not?
How about that? And this is not a momentous occasions. This is just going to be a sort of a catch-all.
Oh, well, we could talk about another Nicolas Cage movie at length.
Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Hey, JJ Go. I'm calling with a momentous occasion of having just been at the best JJ Go meetup ever with Jesse, and it was amazing. And hold on. At one point, we talked to a guy for a while, and he was great. And then later, we were talking to some other people, and my friend goes, "Hey, by the way, Guy is the guy who just got married by Jesse last week." And the girl who's with us goes, "Oh, yeah, I'm the girl from the secret sex party. I'm the girlfriend. She's the roommate. And sitting down over there is the boyfriend." And it was just amazing because it was fantastic, and we had a great time. And then I had to leave a little early because I have pneumonia. But I went anyway because of how good it was. It was wonderful.
So number one, I will admit that as much as I'd like to take credit for this meetup, it was your meetup.
It was my, yes. The guy made a mistake at the top.
Right.
But yes, that was my meetup. And it was, it had appearances from regular JJ Go characters.
Yeah. I mean,
It's like when you stay at the Disneyland Hotel and Pinocchio comes over to your table during brunch.
Oh, I was going to say, you're staying in the Disneyland Hotel and you wake up and Pinocchio's in your bed.
Yeah. Turn down service.
Turn down? And his nose gets a little bit longer.
All I heard was secret sex party in that entire phone.
Yeah, well, did you get to talk to the secret sex party people?
Yeah, I talked to
Did
I
you go to
everybody.
The secret sex party? Because you were invited to the secret sex party.
No, I only went to the meetup, which was a sex-free affair, but you wouldn't have known. I think we all blew our happiness loads.
On account of the dicks that were out.
The dicks, yes.
Is
exactly.
this what the
Not yours specifically.
Right.
What? So wait, the single guys these days are turning down opportunities to go to secret sex parties?
Yeah, let's be clear. They called in to talk to us about secret sex parties and said if Jordan was going to be in Seattle, he was invited to secret sex parties.
And you turned no go.
Well, I didn't like It was one of those. It's one of those things.
His dick was out. If it was going to happen, it would have happened.
It's one of those things where, you know, it's like your friend like has a cabin, let's say.
Okay.
Your friend has a cabin.
Not or... groups of people get together there to fuck.
Sure. Or a jet ski. And he's like, you know, you got to come out and ride my jet ski sometime. Of course you want to ride the jet ski. Of course you want to ride the jet ski. But then you see your friend, you can't say, hey, what about the jet ski? When are we going to ride that jet ski? You got to wait for, like, him to plan it because it's his thing.
I don't know. You lost me.
You have a jet ski?
Yeah, if you guys ever fucked on a jet ski is where I'm going with this.
Hi, Jordan, Jessica. This is Leslie in Seattle, and I'm calling with a topical occasion. I just got out of the movie The Fighter, and during the previews, there was a trailer for Thor. And guy behind me said to his friend, hey, I saw Kenneth Branagh's name. I should go see that. So there you go. Here's your answer.
This is something we were talking about on the last show, is why is Kenneth Branagh directing the Thor movie?
I'm going to go with money.
Well,
no,
I mean,
we know why took the job.
Yes, okay, why did he? Why was he asked to direct the Thor movie?
Can we, before we address that, The Fighter, real quick?
Yeah.
No more working class Irish Catholic people from Boston. Stop it, Hollywood.
In You're films.
Stop it. Just In stop films. It. Even they all can't be, you know, rags to riches, lovable. Like, fuck it, stop it. The town is the cutoff. I'm not watching any more of those movies.
You know, and I would say if we're gonna ban one Irish Catholic working class movie from the year, let's keep The Fighter.
The town was first. The town was first.
Oh, this is just a chronological.
Yes, yeah, purely chronological.
I did not enjoy the town. I kind of liked the town too, but I would say that I thought The Fighter was a pretty good movie.
I haven't seen it. I have the screener.
I'm kind of excited to see it because I really like David O. Russell.
This is super. It's the most David O. Russell-y, non-David O. Russell movie you'll ever see.
Interesting.
Does, he plays the brother. I'm blanking on his name.
Sure. Terminator.
Yeah.
Christian Bale?
Christian Bale. Go. Does he not take movies unless he can do something drastic to his body? Does he just turn them down?
Yeah, I think...
Unless he can
you know
fuck
what?
With his metabolism
when I heard, When I heard Christian Bale on Fresh Air, I don't think I've ever heard someone on public radio come off like more of an asshole.
Yeah. Oh, have you also read his recent Esquire interview, too?
Oh, yeah?
He like gets all up in the interviewer's face. It's like this weird... It's like this weird Frost-Nixon duel with no stakes.
Is there an easier thing... Is there an easier thing in the world than being a movie star? Like, I mean,
No, I agree with you. No.
Just be nice. No. Everyone fucking loves you. Just, hey, man, yeah, it was really fun doing this. Just fucking be nice.
Jordan, to be fair,
sure.
I think you said no stakes.
Yeah.
But he is the leader of the, he is the leader of...
What were you trying to do there?
No, I was going to say he was the leader of the Tories, but then I remembered that their leader is now the Prime Minister of England.
Yeah,
I thought that's a bad example.
No, I get it. Sure,
then
sure.
I wanted to go. Then I couldn't remember what the third party was that was ruling with the Tories in England. Well, there's the Tories. There's a Conservative Party, the Tories, and then there's Labour, and then there's a third one.
Gryffindor. It's Gryffindor.
How about this? Can I say, to be fair, he is governor of Tennessee.
Sure.
And his term has been somewhat controversial.
That's fine.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, also, I would say Christian Bale is one of those actors where if you want to enjoy him, just don't seek out interview material.
Yeah.
Just assume that he's not being interviewed. Also, one Jason Schwartzman. Just like keep away from all interviews.
I actually really like
him.
Interviews with Jason Schwartzman.
I feel like my hearing interviews with him made me enjoy him.
Did you hear him in The Treatment?
That specifically.
Really?
I didn't like him on. Okay. No, I didn't. But I agree to disagree.
But with Christian Bale, it's one of those things where if you like, I don't like doing interviews. Here's the thing: don't do them.
Yeah.
Just respectfully decline.
I think sometimes it's in your contract that you have to do it.
Right.
So you can't do it.
Then have a white Ryan Spritzer and
Sure. Guy. No, I agree. Live it up for sure.
But back to Thor. I
just want to say. Being interviewed is not that hard.
No, it's not.
Absolutely
it's
not.
Even if you have to do it all day, it's annoying. Is it annoying?
Yes.
Yes.
Are people who do interviews insipid? Typically.
Yes. Yes.
Some people are great.
Present company excluded. Sure. Sure. No, when I did stuff for the book and I did all these radio interviews and I did like four or five of them in a day, and a lot of them were with like Drive Time shock DJs. So, making friends with black people, yuckity yuck. And it was awful. Like, I would get off the phone and be like, I was an asshole. But, you know,
it's fine.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. Okay. As a guy who has to hang around entertainment reporters as part of his job, yes, they are the worst people in the world.
I don't want you to think this call, we got 20 seconds to listen to this call. And at first you'll think like, well, this segment is fine, but it's not blowing my mind. But wait until you get to the end, okay?
Okay.
Hey, Jordan and Jesse, it's Mike. I'm in Hawaii instead of Seattle during Jordan's meetup. I just wanted to say maximum fun forever. I couldn't make it because I'm, you know, thousands of miles away from Seattle. One love to Jordan. One love to Jesse. You guys rock out.
Oh, man, awesome. That guy's great.
Having had the great fortune to visit Hawaii on a couple of occasions, the fact that he did anything, that he was even thinking about a meetup on the mainland.
That he was doing something that wasn't rum-based.
Right. He is a great and amazing supporter of your program, clearly. Yeah.
Can I maybe take this time?
Yeah.
While we're discussing rocking out.
Out?
Out.
You're having another meetup, right?
I'm having another meetup. Someone called, said they had a good time. This guy wished he could have been there when he was in Hawaii. If you're in Chicago.
Or anywhere in the Midwest.
Anywhere in the Midwest. I know last week on the show I said it was going to be on the East Coast. I just don't know what a map of America looks like, okay?
Yeah. Fine. I was impressed that you
were wrong. That's a pretty epic error.
It's America's third largest city.
Sure. Absolutely. But if you're around Chicago, January 7th, I'm getting another meetup.
Milwaukee. If you're in Milwaukee, you
Gary,
should be
Indiana.
There. Gary,
yeah.
Indiana.
We
you
can,
should be there.
Sure. We, there's some
Madison,
several,
Wisconsin. Boom. You should be there.
Several songs we can sing from the Music Man if you show up. 76 trombones led the big parade.
If you're in a Wells Fargo wagon,
you
should be there. You
should get started now.
If you're
you
a librarian and your name is Marion, you should be there.
All the info is on MaximumFun.org. I forget the place for having it. You know, why don't you boot it up? I shouldn't leave that hanging.
Yeah, we shouldn't leave it hanging.
There's a place called Sheffield's.
It's in...
Is that right?
It's in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes.
The great city of Chicago, Illinois. It is on January 7th at Sheffield's.
Yes!
7th at Sheffield's, starting at 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a sex meetup or is it just a regular meetup?
This is a regular meetup.
But I think Jordan's made it clear that he's not averse to receiving an invitation, perhaps passed from sweaty palm to sweaty palm.
Ladies. Sure. But
like a secret code word and an address.
If anybody wants to go up to one of the Great Lakes and ride jet skis, that's mainly what I'm concerned with.
In January.
With. Yes.
Okay, let's go back to the telephones.
Hey, Jordan, Jesse, go. This is Heather in South Louisiana. I have to say, Jesse, you are so right about Satsumas. They are amazing. And I've always had neighbors and aunts and uncles who live in the country who have their own Satsuma trees. So it's pretty sweet getting free Satsumas. Yep. Okay, bye.
Satsumas, of course, the Asian character from 16 Candles.
Yes.
you're thinking of Long Duck Dong.
Right, right.
I just want to thank everyone who took the time to email me. I mean, it's one of those things where if you're a broadcaster, as I am, you sometimes don't realize the extent to which you really touch people's lives. And I have gotten so many emails from people who... Just people.
Do you need a minute? Do you need to? Sorry.
Getting emotional over fruit? Is that what's happening right now?
People who didn't know about Satsumas, no. Or they knew about Satsumas and they didn't feel comfortable talking about them in public or just being who they
were. Because
there's
a stigma. There's a stigma attached to them.
Satsuma fans, it gets better.
Yeah.
And I have gotten so many emails and Twitter messages of support, literally more than any other thing we've ever talked about on this program. I've literally received dozens. I've received letters.
Wow.
In the mail. And I just want to thank all those people. You really make me feel like the work that I do here is important. And for those of you out there who are still eating Tangelos or navel oranges, don't worry, it gets better.
It gets better.
It gets better.
Do you still have any of these?
Yeah, oh, there's Satsumas here. You can have one on your way out.
I'll be absconding with Satsumas.
Hey, Jordan, Jessica, this is Evan from Indiana, and I have a question for each of you. First off, Jesse, I'm 19, and I'm a male, straight male, and I wear what you would refer to as skinny jeans. And I need to know, what is the proper age to stop wearing those? Because I know you're vehemently against them, but I need to know where to draw the line. And Jordan, what are some NES and Super NES games you can recommend to me? I probably have similar taste to what you have when it comes to video games, but I'm just not sure what to get. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Each question in its turn.
Sure.
Now.
Nick has some strong opinions about the first question.
Now, immediately.
501
it up, my friend.
I think that it depends on a couple of factors. I'm inclined to just agree with Nick, but there are certain exceptions I'm willing to make.
Are you on a skateboard right now?
Are you very skinny? If you're very skinny and you're punk rock, you're totally punk rock.
Sure. Totally. You can't half-ass it.
Then you can go as far as, I would say, the absolute last moment when I think it's appropriate, even if you're really skinny and totally punk rock, unless you're fronting a band, I would say...
Or working at Amoeba. Working at Amoeba.
Sure.
Where is he calling from? Do they have an Amoeba? Where is it? Did he say?
I don't know where
Indiana?
He said.
Indiana? Something like that.
There's only three, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably not.
He's probably calling
Indiana,
from Berkeley
probably.
Or Haight Street,
Berkeley.
Right?
Indiana
right.
probably hasn't. Anyway.
He... 24. I think 24 is the hard cutoff, after which no one who isn't the front man
I thought you
of
were,
a band...
That's generous. I thought you were going to go see...
Even bass
well,
players have
that's
to
what I'm saying.
Get it together.
I think if you're not really skinny, the cutoff is 18.
Sure.
If you are not really skinny and totally punk rock, I would say the cutoff is 21.
Okay. But if you're assuming he's very skinny and punk rock, you're saying he can go to 24.
Right.
Okay.
If he's at community college studying architecture, he can't be wearing those jeans, is what you're saying.
I'm saying, okay. And I also want to add that if you are overweight at all,
take them off.
You should not, no matter what your age is. And I mean that, look, I wouldn't call myself fat, but I'm probably 10 pounds overweight.
You're looking for is American.
Yeah. Mm. If you're a normal American person, you should really be underweight. And if you need an alternative, go get yourself a nice 5'14". If you're a big enough man, if you got a meaty thigh, you can pull off a 501 effectively, then go for it. 501 is an excellent gene. If you're looking for something that's a little bit slimmer, but not embarrassing, I recommend a 5'14, slim straight.
Hmm.
Get the rigid wash. It's not raw, but it's worthwhile. Jordan, Super Nintendo games.
Yeah, I'm wondering why this guy wants recommendations for Nintendo and Super Nintendo
I assume
games.
That there had been prior shows in which you discussed Super Nintendo games.
Oh, no, certainly. I mean, I'm a good person to ask about that. I'm just wondering why at this juncture.
Why is he going backwards in the video game technology?
Yeah, I don't know if he's been eBaying old systems. I mean, I can get behind that. Or I guess a lot of systems have download services.
Yeah, you got the emulators.
He could probably download some of these things. Let's see. Let's start with
Baseball Stars.
Certainly Baseball Stars.
Little
we can
League
all
World
agree
Series.
With that. For NES?
Yeah.
Well, I've never played Little League World Series. What does that have on a Baseball Stars, a Baseball Simulator 1000?
It's just another baseball game.
Okay, great.
But it's great because
RBI baseball.
Every team has like one kid, you know, like the Chinese team or the Taipei team, there's one kid that you just can't pitch to. If it crosses the plate, he'll hit it 1,000 feet. It's just like every team has one guy like that.
Sounds like a great game, Nick. I'm glad you're recommending it.
It's a lot of
sounds
fun.
Fantastic.
It's a lot of fun.
I might say for the NES.
Yeah.
The
Super Famicom. The
Super Famicom, if
Wait,
you're Japanese.
Wait, no, the Famicom. The standard Famicom.
Sure. Yeah. I like the Mega Man games, if you like action games. 2 and 3, I think, are the best of the bunch. 6 has its charms. It's a little harder to find, but if you're downloading things, I'm sure it'll be readily available. Castlevania 3, I think, is a spectacular game. These are both side-scrolling action games. Let's see. Final Fantasy 3, if you want a role-playing game. This all is NES stuff. For Super NES, I think Zelda 3 is one of the best video games of all time. That's A Link to the Past. I think essential playing if you're interested in the world of Zelda. And yeah, just video games in general. It's one of the best video games of all time. Zelda 3. Also, you maybe want to get, along those same lines, you want to get a Super Castlevania. Not an incredibly out-of-the-box Castlevania adventure, but a very good one.
Can I suggest a game for the NES?
You may, please.
Avoid the Noid?
Yeah, sure. Anything that had a fast food tie-in. We're talking MC Kids. Cool Spot.
The 7-Up game.
Yeah, the 7-Up branded game. Yeah. Also, any of the Final Fantasies for the Super Nintendo are very good. Those are a ton of fun. Yeah, there you go. Mario Kart. Boom. Super Nintendo. First appearance of Mario Kart.
Oh, is that what they said?
Mario Kart's really fun.
Yeah, Mario Kart's really fun. And then maybe Punch Out and Super Punch Out.
Hey, you know what's a fun game for the Nintendo that I can recommend?
What?
RC Pro-Am 2.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah.
That's a really fun game.
I never played RC Pro-Am 2. I played 1.
Well, it's even better. The differences are modest.
Is there a new offensive weapon?
There's like a few extra kinds of tires and slightly improved graphics, but they don't mess up anything.
Hey, great.
Contra?
Oh, yeah. Contra? I think if you're going to get a Contra adventure, you're going to want to get Contra 3, The Alien Wars for Super Nintendo. That maybe is the definitive Contra adventure.
Spoke too soon.
I would say.
If you're going to get a Contra adventure.
If you're going to go back to video games from 2 decades ago, they're kind of crappy.
Don't bother with Super C. I think there is something called Contra Adventure, too. Also, don't play that. That's no good.
We'll be back.
Contra 3, The Alien Wars.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan Jesse Go. It's Jordan Jesse Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Nick, repeat Adams.
Before we get to the momentous occasions, let's check in with a moment of shame.
Hey, Jordan Jesse Go. It's Patrick Ford from Omaha. I was just feeling a little bummed out this week. I have a moment of shame for you. I was feeling bummed out this week, and I was drinking a beer in bed, and I was reading through the old notes that my girlfriend wrote me in high school. And while I was reading them, I put my beer down on my side table wrong, and it fell on top of my bed. And so most of a beer spilled out onto my bed and my bedclothes. And so now I have to sleep on the couch because my bed's just smells like beer. So that made like a fairly unhappy day, just that much more unhappy. But I thought you guys might get a kick out of it. Have a good one. Bye.
We need more listeners like this.
Yeah.
That slamming sound you heard right at the end of that voicemail was the medicine cabinet closing. And the next sound, like if we could continue that, the next sound would have been a pill bottle opening and then just a thud of like about 180 pounds hitting the floor. That was the saddest thing I've ever heard.
I really like a listener who's got the guts to call in and let us know that he was sitting on his bed reading love notes from his ex-girlfriend.
While getting drunk alone.
From high school. Did he say high
from
school?
From high school. He said high school.
Because now it's a sliding scale. If this guy's 22, it's a little sad-ish. If this guy's 32, maybe.
Yeah.
Also, it depends if his dick's out.
If his dick's out, it's just a party.
Sure.
Here's something magical, though. This is a two-parter.
Hey, Jordan, Jesse Go. It's Patrick Foy again. I just now spilled beer on my couch, too. So I guess I'm sleeping on the floor tonight. Hopefully I don't spill beer on my carpet. Bye.
Yay!
If you're reading old love letters from your high school girlfriend and you spill beer in your bed, night's over. That's the sign.
Yeah, don't try and keep that party going.
The night is over. You turn off the lights.
Yeah.
Tomorrow will be a better day. This guy, he tried to power through
it. No.
Nick, as you know, when something momentous happens to our listeners, we ask that they give us a call at 206-984-4FUN to join us, to share their moment with us for a segment called Momentous Occasions. I narrowed it down to just a couple. We had a lot of great momentous occasions, but we've been going so long, and you know there were so many. I just narrowed it down to a tight three.
Hi, Jordan. Hi, Jesse. Hi, guest. This is Phil from Brooklyn. I am just getting back from a friend's New Year's party. Happy New Year's, by the way. And, well, it turns out that those were pot brownies. I had an attitude towards drugs very similar to Jesse's, so this is my first time being high. I'm high right now. I know you like people to call while it's happening, so I thought I would call you guys. So, wish me luck. Bye.
Wow, he's been dosed.
That guy got dosed.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, I think you probably have more experience with edibles here than anybody.
Nick, you're an enthusiastic marijuana user.
I take the pot.
Any tips for if you find yourself accidentally dosed?
You're the person present most likely to wear a t-shirt with a pot leaf on it.
I would never wear a t-shirt with a pot leaf on it. I would wear like a button, you know, like a Prop 19 button or something like that.
You would go to a rally in a doctor's coat with a giant marijuana leaf painted on the back.
I have a dashi. Now is the perfect time to watch Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
You have Netflix?
Yeah. Dude, if he watched that movie, he would get so, his mind would be so fucked up.
It's perfect. It's a perfect time. Maybe have a cocktail.
The first time he's ever been high, he's gonna watch that nightmare of a movie.
Just relax. Don't call the cops.
That movie freaked me out, and I was not high.
That's what I'm saying. He's got to get himself to a streaming device.
Yeah.
Maybe a Roku box.
I am a Roku owner.
Sure. Do you have a Blu-ray player with wireless?
Get on it.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder if I might ever one day eat a pot brownie.
Why?
Why wouldn't I, right?
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, because you've dedicated.
Because I never have. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's not like I've dedicated my whole life to not doing it because I'm morally opposed.
Sure. Why not just smoke pot then?
I've never really smoked anything. I think the smoking would be so annoying to me.
You couldn't enjoy it.
That I wouldn't be able to. Yeah.
You could also vaporize. Yeah. Or are you with the water vapor?
No, water vapor might work. Sure. Sure, water vapor might work.
I'm shocked that someone who is as much of a hip-hop connoisseur as yourself
has never
taken part of the chronic as the...
Yeah, I know. Isn't it odd?
The old people say.
It's one of those things about me. One of those things that led that one iTunes reviewer to say that I'm a guy with a collection of eccentricities in place of a personality.
Oh, wow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Sweet, huh?
Fuck you, dude. Oh, never mind. I was gonna make something like, "Oh, you're a late period Wes Anderson movie." That's dumb, though. I shouldn't
it
say
is.
That.
Yeah.
Hello, Jordan and Jesse and guest. This is Casey calling from Charlottesville, Virginia. I just asked my girlfriend to marry me based on a conversation where we were talking about how great it was that Jesse had officiated a wedding for a friend, for someone else, and. Yeah, and we decided to get engaged because I was talking about that. And then sort of everyone thought it was a joke, but then it wasn't a joke. And then I really said we were going to get engaged. And so now we are going to get engaged. And that's the end of that. Okay, bye.
Okay. As a married man.
Yeah, I'm a married man as well.
Yes, right. You're also a married man.
As a married pot user.
As a married marijuana aficionado.
Let's talk about vaporizer brands.
That story...
Let's talk about one of those gas masks you put on that has the
ball. Started out very romantic and then got a little dicey.
Well, because there's a bunch of engaged? Other people there. Yeah, it was a little confusing. I mean, here's the touching part.
Yeah.
He seemed so happy. And God bless him, because marriage is a wonderful thing.
It is a great thing.
Whether it's between a man and a woman, two men, two women.
But then now what?
A man and his dog.
Yeah, what? It's a slippery slope, because now dogs are involved, Jesse. I don't know about that.
I'm for all of it. Hey, look, I've got San Francisco values, my friend. Sure. I say gays should certainly be able to get married, and if that means men people can marry dogs, fuck it. Why not?
Sure.
Let's go for it. Sounds fun.
All right, Nancy Pelosi. Thanks. All right. Now that you had your soapbox time. What are we... Oh, you're saying that wasn't very romantic.
What?
Well, because it came out that maybe there were other people there and that it was a discussion more than a proposal.
And then he said, we're going to get engaged. I'm pretty sure it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you just ask
and then they say yes and you're engaged.
It's like a promise ring situation, it sounds like. Sounds like they're a couple of Mormon 16-year-olds.
I've known some people that have gotten engaged in weird ways like that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's unheard of.
Yeah.
You maybe want to firm that up.
Where I feel, usually what I feel like when I hear about a situation where people got engaged in some roundabout way like that, I kind of feel like maybe the lady tricked the fella into it somehow, like sort of backed him into a corner somehow.
Right.
Which, you know, may well be the fella's fault. I don't know. I'm not party to it. Yeah. But I definitely think there's something to be said for surprising them, even if it means making it seem like, oh, I don't know. And then you, even if you are going to propose... I think the surprise is nice.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to... I don't think every proposal has to be...
On a hot air balloon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be crazy like that, but I think it has to end in a...
It should at least come out of a cannon.
Right. Who, him or her?
Or something.
Somebody.
I don't know. What,
you
just
figure
out
whatever, the detail.
Whatever.
Jordan,
but at the end
are
of
you
it,
thinking
who am
of
I,
a
Jennifer
human...
Lopez and the wedding planner? I'm not. Just fire something out of a cannon.
Are you thinking of a human cannonball, not a wedding proposal?
What were we talking about?
Wedding proposal.
We're talking about old-time circus freaks, right?
No.
Oh.
Well, is that why you've been biting the heads off of chickens this whole segment?
Yes.
If only you guys could have seen.
At the end of a proposal, there should be a definite engagement and not...
Yeah.
Not
a we're gonna... Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, Jordan, Jesse, go. This is Matt from New York. I'm calling in with a momentous occasion. Today, I bet a coworker that he can't eat 100 mini cupcakes in a half an hour. And it turns out he can't. So I won $70, and he ate 50 cupcakes.
And a man died.
And finished the day with a horrible stomach ache. Enjoy the show. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Here's what really happened. A fat person wanted to eat a bunch of cupcakes and not be ashamed about it. That's what happened. That guy knew he couldn't eat 100 mini cupcakes. He just wanted to gorge himself shame-free. That's all that happened that day. And this guy got $70 out of it. So good for him.
Hey, guys, I can eat 50 eggs.
All right, cool hand, Luke.
We'll be back in just a second on Jordan, Jesse, Go. Jordan, Jesse, Go. I'm Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart.
Jordan Morris, boy detective.
Nick Repeat Adams.
Another delightful program with Nick Repeat Adams in the chair over there.
Sure,
always fun.
Nick, when does your television program have its proper premiere? There was a sneak preview.
There was a sneak preview, which apparently snuck by
most of America.
Yeah. But the proper season premiere of Perfect Couples will be on January 20th, Thursday night. 8:30, sandwiched in between two fine comedy programs.
The community program.
The community program, which is picking up steam and getting better every episode, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
And a show that you may have heard of called The Office.
I've heard about this program. I've heard it's a winner.
I think it's gonna stick.
Hey, guess what? Me and Jordan are going to be in San Francisco.
Absolutely. As part of the San Francisco Sketch Fest.
We've got a couple of
things going here.
We got three shows going on.
Let's enumerate.
Okay, so number one, you have your show with Hot Mess, your sketch comedy group.
Yes, I have a sketch comedy group, Hot Mess. We perform down here at the UCB Theater. We will be up at the Dark Room Theater in San Francisco on the, 13th and 14th, I believe.
Dark Room, a lovely little theater, an intimate venue, a great place to go see a show.
Absolutely, yeah. We're there with some other fine sketch comedy groups. I think, 13th and 14th.
Of January. SF Sketch Fest.com. And in fact, after this, we will be running a sketch that you and Ian from Hot Mess will be recording live.
Yes, absolutely.
Just for Jordan, Jesse, Go listeners.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you have a Sound of Young America show.
I've got a Sound of Young America live program featuring myself, of course, the great John Vanderslice, Bobcat Goldthwait, the gifted film director and legendary crazy-voiced comedian and star of Hot to Trot. but he was he was on The Sound of Young America maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Just a really fascinating, cool, funny guy.
I haven't seen one of his recent supposedly credible movies, but I hear they're very good.
He's a really interesting, fascinating guy. Like, he sort of quit stand-up comedy in order to he was the director of Kimmel for quite some time.
Yeah.
And worked closely with Jimmy Kimmel for a while. I think he worked on The Man Show as a director. And basically what stand-up he does now is just to pay for these kind of really intense, dark comedy films that he's made to much critical acclaim.
And I have to say, I did a show with him at UCB. I did that show that Ed and Seth, the puppet show. And he's really funny. Like I didn't know what to expect. I knew he wasn't going to be the Police
yelling
Academy guy,
right.
But he's very funny.
Even if I remember liking him when he yelled.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's even funny.
The very funny Steve Dildarian, who is the creator of the funny HBO show The Life and Times of Tim, will also be on that program. Stand-up comedy from Baron Vaughn. And we may even pack in another special guest on that show. We'll see.
Hmm.
And then we have the Monsters of Podcasting, the triumphant return to San Francisco of the Monsters of Podcasting, ourselves and our friends from You Look Nice Today. And those two shows are respectively on the 22nd for The Sound of Young America Live and the 23rd for the Monsters of Podcasting, both at the Eureka in San Francisco. Beautiful theater, wonderful place to see a show. They're really going to be a blast. sfsketchfest.com for your tickets. And I also want to mention, if you're here in Southern California, we are doing a very special Sound of Young America Presents event with the kind people from CineFamily, which is we are showing one of my favorite films of all time. And when I say favorite films of all time, I'm talking like top three, A Thousand Clowns. At the Silent Movie Theater at CineFamily here in Los Angeles. And then afterwards, I'm going to be doing an onstage Q&A with the star of that film. When he was in the film, he was like 13, I think, Barry Gordon, who went on to become a lawyer and became the president of SAG and is now a talk radio host. But he's also he also was the kid who sang All I Want for Christmas Is My Two Front Teeth.
Cool.
Before he was acclaimed on Broadway and in films in A Thousand Clowns. But A Thousand Clowns is this amazing movie that stars Jason Robards as a kind of down on his luck comedy writer who's quit his job writing for a stupid kids show, a sort of pathetic kids show. And Child Protective Services is coming to take away his adopted son, who's his nephew. Who lives with him. And it's really, I mean, it's just for a comedy fan or somebody who's in the comedy industry or understands that world. I mean, we're talking about emotional development and the comedy world. It's really about a comedy guy who's struggling to figure out how to become an adult and have real meaningful relationships in the world without losing what's special about him and what makes him such a brilliant comedy person, which is, you know, this passion and zeal and unique perspective on the world that he has. And it's just totally amazing, hilarious, touching film based on a Pulitzer or something, Tony Award-winning play. And the role that made Jason Robards famous, and for good reason, because he's totally fucking amazing in it. And also, Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World is in it.
Cool.
So, if you're wondering about that, that's on January 27th. All this stuff at MaximumFun.org. And hey, Max FunCon just is full. It's now full. So, if you want to try and get into Max FunCon, you better get on the wait list. We will let out a couple wait list tickets at some point because we've sort of been conservative about the number of guests that we're going to book, so hopefully we'll have a couple of beds anyway. But
maybe just show up with a couple of smoking hot babes.
Yeah, well, that might get you past the velvet rope.
Yeah. Might get you in.
Just so you know, the way
ladies drink free at Max FunCon.
Yeah, two for one.
Sure.
Wait list at MaximumFun.org. Be sure and include your phone number and whether you are coming solo or coming with someone who will be sharing your bed. 206-984-4FUN, the number to call if you want to talk to us. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, Nick. Thank you again.
Always fun. Always look forward to seeing Coco.
And Sissy.
And
Ice-T.
By the way, Coco and Ice-T live in my second bedroom.
Yes. Sure. Oh, my God. Coco, now I have to go to the internet and just...
What? That's another email I've been getting a lot lately. Apparently, when I alluded to the fact that I got a new dog, I never said what her name is. Her name is Sissy.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great dog. So for all of you out there who like to keep track of my dog's names and keep emailing me, sure. The second dog's name is Sissy. We'll see you next time on Jordan Jesse Goes. Keep it locked right here for a sketch from Hot Mess.
All right, this is Taco Stop Radio Commercial, take one. Before you read, Dan, just remember, this is a big burrito for guys, so just give us intense and in your face.
Okay, can do. All right. The new Beef Barrage Burrito from Taco Stop is a full pound of ground beef, refried beans, and our spicy chipotle napalm sauce. It's the burrito that goes boom! All right, how was that? Is that good?
Yeah, that was a good first take, but we're looking for something masculine.
That's what I was doing, you know? It was really loud and...
Yeah, just turn up the tough a little bit. Think construction worker, football coach, dads on boats, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay, got it. The new Beef Barrage Burrito from Taco Stop is a full...
Okay, all right. I'm going to stop you again. You sound like you have an elf's balls in your mouth, dude. If we wanted a girl to read this, we would have gone down to the dress store and found one.
I just don't know how much more masculine I can sound right now.
Okay, all right. Maybe I'm not being clear about this. This is for hard-drinking, barely literate guys who yell at cops and have a jet ski injury. You sound like a butterfly whispering a secret to his friend, a bell.
Okay. We could give it another shot.
Fine. We gotta get this on the next take, though.
All right. The new Beef Barrage Burrito from Taco Stop is a full
More
pound
manly.
Of green
Think
refried
Genghis Khan.
Beans and
You're Charlie Sheen on a coke binge. Come on, man. You're an ape rapist.
Wait, I don't understand. Am I an ape who rapes other apes or a person who's raping apes? Come on.
God, just give me intense, regular guy.
I'm sorry, that's what I was doing, though, don't you think?
Okay. Let's do it one line at a time. Say it with me. A pound of beef.
A pound of beef.
Okay, again, imagine you're a caveman killing a mastodon.
A pound of beef.
Okay, too brainy, Point Dexter. Think incoherent. You're a dumb motherfucker who lives to huff paint and puke at a social distortion concert. Closer, you dropped out of high school to install car stereos.
I'm not even saying words anymore.
Gah! How can I make you understand?
Oh my god, man, what are you doing with that gun? Put that away!
Say it. Now say it.
The new Beef Barrage Burrito from Taco Stop is a full pound of ground beef. Refried beans. And our spicy chipotle napalm sauce. It's a burrito that goes boom.
All right, that is it. We got it, Dan. If you're not dead, take a lunch.